Hi, everyone. I'm Nikki Porter.
And I'm Nadine Smith, and this is Canada Horse Podcast, brought to you by Informed Equestrian.
We strive to enhance the lives of horse owners by facilitating conversations that make people want to talk. Here on Canada Horse Podcast, we are spotlighting the Canadian horse industry while serving our mission to help bridge the knowledge gap for horse owners by offering the whys behind the decisions we make for our horses, from their tack to their trainers to their vet care and everything in between.
Our listeners are encouraged to use the information offered here on the Canada Horse Podcast to make informed choices that suit their individual needs. We believe in education over judgment and informed choices over following the crowd.
Hi, guys. This is episode 20 of Canada Horse Podcast. 20 episodes. That feels like a milestone worth celebrating.
You're right. Not only have we produced 20 episodes, it has been exactly 6 months since Canada Horse Podcast first launched.
Oh my gosh, does time ever fly by? If you've been listening since the beginning, we want to say a huge thank you. If you're a new listener, welcome. You'll quickly find out that this is a passion project for both of us. We absolutely love bringing you conversations that make you think and challenge you to take an active role in understanding why you make the choices you do with yourself and your horses.
So with that said, we have a guest today with us who I think is about to really open our minds when it comes to equine breeding and reproduction. We have Shawn Rathy with us. She is the manager of equine reproduction at Bar None Ranches, located in Alberta, Canada. Shawn grew up riding on the national hunter jumper circuit. She strives to stay on the cutting edge of current advances in research, attends seminars, and consults with colleagues in her field throughout the world. Shawn is responsible for the health, training, and well-being of the farm's broodmares, foals, and stallions. Welcome to the show, Shawn.
Hi, thank you.
Hi, Shawn. So nice to meet you. To get this started, could you please tell us just a little bit more about your personal involvement with horses, what led you to your position with Bar None Ranches, which I love the name as well, and a little bit more about the facility.
All right. Well, I grew up riding, but I didn't grow up on a farm. I grew up in a barn. A big difference. I was one of those kids that rode everything. And I made a business out of it, riding amateur old ladies' horses during the week, that kind of thing. And we never actually lived on a farm. When we moved to Alberta, I worked with a lot of young horses, and I ended up working with a lot of stallions. A lot of people have stallions for some reason in Alberta. And I ended up working with First Nations sort of equine program, kind of like Olds College out here, but for First Nations. And we would tour Bar None. I don't know if you've ever seen Bar None, but a lot of people around here have driven past it, go on tours, but we would go on a tour of Bar None Ranches, and we would see everything. I became pretty good friends with some of the managers and stuff. And when that equine program came to a close, it just so happened that there was a position here opening up, and it was someone who, lo and behold, wanted a lot of, they needed someone with a lot of stallion experience, as well as some foaling. And it was a perfect fit.
Oh, that's really cool. So the facility, I know you spoke a little bit about it when we were originally talking, but it's bigger than just reproduction, right? I know we're going to focus on that, but it's quite a big place. Is that right?
Yes. At the time when they founded it and when they built it, they designed it, they sort of modeled it after like a Kentucky thoroughbred farm. So it's very expansive. There's no detail has been missed. We have a full 5/8 track. We have training barn, a breeding barn, obviously, and then another barn for the racehorses. We have a hyperbaric oxygen chamber for horses, indoor arenas, outdoor arenas. So it's quite impressive. We're kind of like a destination for horse people if they come to Southern Alberta, just to come visit and see the place.
Oh, wow. That is really cool. The hyperbaric oxygen chamber. That's really neat. So in terms of the reproduction part, what does it mean for you guys to provide the breeding and reproductive services at the ranch?
Well, originally we stood three different thoroughbred stallions, and of course we would only do live cover, and we had 80 broodmares. Now with just the development of racing, how things have sort of transpired, we still stand our own thoroughbred stallion. We still maintain a broodmare band of about 20, 25 mares. But because we do have this huge facility and, I mean, we have everything in place, we've started taking other breeds. So we've gone into collection, we go into artificial insemination, and then breeding management of mares. So if you have a mare, but you just can't be bothered to, or, you know, you don't have time to track her cycle, get her bred, you know, go pick up semen from the airport, all that kind of stuff. We handle all of that right into foaling. Some people live, you know, across the fence from us. Some people actually, I have a client whose mare is here and she's from Nova Scotia. So it's a big undertaking, and we get to see all kinds of breeds. You know, we get a lot of quarter horses. I've had Irish draft, I've had Welsh ponies.
What a wonderful service. I feel like if I was going to breed, that would be the way to go.
You gotta like it.
Yeah. If someone has a mare that they love, and they would like to look into breeding her, what steps would you recommend she do before looking for a stallion?
Well, obviously you want to make sure your mare isn't too old or too young. You really wouldn't want to breed much younger than 4 years old, unless you're going to do embryo transfer, and then you can start as early as you want. And you really wouldn't want to start her breeding career beyond 14. It gets a little bit trickier then, and you might run into challenges. So just basically just start out with the age and then go from there. You want to make sure she's been health tested for any genetic disease. You want to make sure, I mean, you don't want to be breeding the mare that's been struggling with founder, or, you know, has two bowed tendons or something like that, where you're just going to be piling on the problems with her. So guard beyond that, you want to decide why you're breeding. Do you want to breed to maybe sell? Do you want to breed for your own use? And that's going to really affect when you want to start breeding. If you're breeding to sell, say if it's a quarter horse or a thoroughbred or something where there's futurities for the younger horses, you want to start breeding early. So then you want to start making plans, like say, like right now in the fall, because when those horses turn two, you want them to be full 24 months old, not 18 months old, but technically they're two. If you're breeding for yourself, I mean, I've got mares still here breeding right now. So it really depends on what your goals are.
That's really good to know, Nadine. I'm going to cut you off because I know that you're like sitting, you have a question or a response, but the 14, that's really interesting to me because I know a lot of people will ride and they, you know, they get use out of that mare that they really love. And then the mare kind of ages out of what they want to do. And they're sitting and going, well, what do we want to do now? And then they'll think to go and breed. And I know that typically happens after 14. So that's very interesting.
It's not impossible. Yeah. it's not impossible. It's not something you want to rule out at 15. It's going to be more difficult. You might need more tries. I mean, if I was going to start to breed, say, a 15 or 16 year old mare, I would definitely want to get her cycling earlier by putting her under a light system. And so that way we could start as early as possible and get as many tries as possible.
That is really neat. I actually was surprised to hear that as well. And the funny thing is when Sean and I were originally talking about coming on the podcast, I had said to her, you know, do you think maybe we should wait until a little bit into the winter when people are starting to think about actually breeding? And she was like, that's the number one thing. You should be thinking about it right now. So we should do it earlier in the fall. So I knew that was coming.
That's great. And then the other thing would be Nadine, her response aligns beautifully with what we're looking to do, is really looking into like, why are you breeding? Mm-hmm. What, you know, how does why you're doing something impact the choices that you're making? And also the when. So rather than just saying, oh, well, you know, I'm available more right now, or this stud's available, or I'm really excited about it right now. You know, the impact that that has on that horse's, the new horse, the foal's future. We need to start looking in that direction and understanding that really truly does impact the decisions that we make.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about the timing and the methods for breeding. So most of us who have a mare, we can realize when she's in heat, but if that's all we know, when is the best time to actually line up the stallion, to order the semen, when do we know when to do the breeding and what methods are actually available? Can you go into that a little bit?
If you're not having her under lights, when she starts cycling in the spring, you probably want to get her ultrasounded so that way you can track her cycle. As far as the stallion goes, when you choose your stallion, that's where you want to make sure you understand what his breeding season is. Some stallions only breed, say, from February up until June, and then they're gone for shows. So with that, if you're breeding that particular stallion, you probably don't want to start breeding in May because you're not going to get many chances. And then, if you're going to breed to him, you'd want to probably start in February or March and make sure you know what days he gets collected. If you're doing fresh semen, where if he has got frozen semen, where the frozen semen is being kept, all those, you want all that prepared ahead of time because there's going to be enough delays and enough people in between that it's going to be confusing. So you want all the details as much as you can so you can plan it out.
So can we basic this down a little bit for those of us who really don't know a lot about collecting semen, frozen semen, cooled semen, fresh, all of those different things? It's a little bit weird to talk about, but probably not for you. Yeah. But yeah. Okay, so say there's this really nice horse in the States that I want to breed my mare to. Obviously, I'm not going to send the mare down there for a live cover. Like, first of all, how close do people usually have to be in order to just go do live cover versus do the shipped semen?
Well, it's interesting because with thoroughbreds, it's all live cover. So we do in fact ship our mares all over the place. So to Kentucky, to Florida, to California, to be live covered. But right now with how fast shipment goes and how easy it is to get the semen from place to place, the location doesn't really matter. I mean, if you have a stallion that you like down in Texas, and they're willing to work with us for shipping, we can definitely make it work up here. So the differences between fresh semen versus frozen semen versus live cover. Live cover is generally going to give you your biggest chances of success. It generally works the best. But obviously, because we can't be shipping our mares everywhere. I mean, it depends on how close you are to the stallion. So I would say for sure, collecting fresh semen and shipping it is the most common. And so that we are collecting the semen, say here on site, we process it, we get it ready, and we ship it out that same day. We usually ship it by air because it has to get there. Generally semen, you have about 3 days to get there and before it's kaput. Your frozen semen, the chances drop a fair amount depending on the stallion, of course, but it's nice because you can have that semen shipped right to your vet and it'll be ready for when your mare ovulates. So you don't have to worry about ordering. You don't have to worry about any of that. With that said, it's more expensive. And say if you have an older mare or a mare that you're having a hard time getting in foal, you might not want to go with frozen semen because it's more expensive and, you know, your chances are lower already.
All right. That's really interesting because I know that those options are available, but because I've never really gone through the process of breeding a mare personally, it's very cool to be able to hear like, oh, well, I had no idea that people would ship their horses all over to breed. I just assumed if your horse is very far away from the stallion you want to breed to, you would just do the shipped semen. So that's really interesting to me. And so you say that's predominantly in the thoroughbred industry. Why is that?
Thoroughbreds have maintained their live cover policy to avoid shrinking the gene pool down. The thing about live cover is you can only serve about 200 mares a year. So if we switch to say allowing the artificial insemination, you could do 20 or you could do 200 mares in a month. I mean, easily just by collection. And then we'd have races full of the same stallion. It kind of keeps our bloodlines a little bit further apart. Obviously there's trends, but it does. It helps sort of maintain the industry how it is.
Great. I had no idea. I'm assuming if I didn't know, other people didn't know. That's great. If someone wanted to breed a mare and they contacted you to facilitate the process, how would that go?
I would talk to them sort of about the things I've covered, like, why do you want to breed her? And not interrogating her. I'm just trying to help them with their goals. So if we're looking to say race or compete in futurities, I'm going to tell them, you know, you need to get your mare under lights. And what the lights does is it sort of manipulates their cycle and they sort of get tricked into thinking it's summer or spring's coming. So then they'll start cycling earlier. If they just have their favorite old mare and they just want a baby out of her to have a baby out of her, I mean, we'll talk about their goals. We'll talk about what stallion they want to use, when they want to foal out, what their plans are for foaling, all those kinds of things. And then we'll come with a plan. They'll come usually 2 weeks prior to being able to be bred, and we will ultrasound, the vet will ultrasound them. We'll track that cycle. We'll make arrangements with the stallion to either have the semen shipped to us, or if it's frozen, have it shipped right away so it's on hand. And then we'll artificially inseminate her. We will ultrasound her again to make sure she ovulated and there's no like inflammation or anything that needs to be taken care of. Then we wait for 2 weeks and cross our fingers.
Okay. So
I love Nadine's processing. She like sits back, listens, and I can watch her go like, okay, now here it is.
I'm just like, okay, so what about the person that's just like, I have a mare. I know she goes in heat. And I know because we're females, we understand this. And Nikki and I have babies. I'm not sure about you. During the heat process, during that cycle of time, when is the ovulation, and do you actually breed them while they're in heat, or is it right after or right before?
It's right when they're in heat. And if you do a lot of live cover, you'll really understand that because you're at the other end holding the stallion. And we will give them a hormone or a drug to induce ovulation to make sure they ovulate while we're breeding them. Wow. So we'll do that. If we're doing frozen, because there's such a small window of the viability of it, we'll actually keep ultrasounding her and inseminate her with the frozen right when she's ovulating.
Wow. So much science.
So good.
Yeah. Okay. So once the mare's there and she's bred, how involved is the owner once she's in your care? Like, how long is that process?
Generally, you're going to look at, say, 2 months. It could be anywhere. I mean, if everything goes perfectly, if she arrives and she's ready to breed, and then, I mean, she catches right away, then you'd only be looking at a month. After about 35 days, you can ultrasound the embryo and read the heartbeat. Generally, by that point, you're safe to transport the mare, but as I said, I mean, things go wrong. Maybe she doesn't catch. Maybe she catches, but when we check her again, the embryo is gone. So I would generally sort of plan for about 2 months. In that time, though, the owner can come out whenever they want. Because I foal out, I'm here all the time, and it doesn't matter to me if they come at 1 in the afternoon or 1 in the morning.
Well, that's good availability. Not necessarily for you.
Yeah.
So. People, like you said, that somebody right now has a horse from Nova Scotia with you, but yeah. Do most people send you mares and foals that live close by, or do you get, like, is there a high percentage of people that are actually shipping their horses from long distances?
Yeah, the majority, like there's a lot of horses in Southern Alberta to begin with, but I'd say the majority of them are within Alberta and Saskatchewan and then into BC. So probably within like 8 to 12 hours drive. And I do have, like, I have lots of local clients that live 5 minutes away. You see a lot of stallion owners that live within a few hours drive that will come to have their stallion collected. And then we have some that are from about 10 hours away that send their stallion down for the whole breeding season. So, and then, yeah, we get quite the menagerie of stallions. We have quarter horses and Irish drafts and minis and yeah, it's really interesting. Yeah.
That's awesome. Go ahead.
Yeah. Nick. And yeah, just in to follow up to that. So the mare is there for about 2 months to get bred. What if they're there to foal out? Do they go back to have the foal?
Yeah. Most owners, I mean, we do have mares that live here year round, but most owners, after the mare is 35 days or a little longer pregnant, they'll take her home and then they'll bring her back to foal out. Generally they bring her a couple weeks before her due date, unless she's looking early or something like that. Then she foals, and then they usually take her home within a couple weeks to a month, depending if they want to breed her back. If they want to breed her back, again, we'll start that whole 2 months sort of plan again, over again.
Okay. So that was kind of my next question, is how long after the mare has had a foal do you wait before you can breed again?
If they're really keen to, like if it's a late foal, say she's born in May, the foal's born in May, we'll generally look at her again in about a week. She'll cycle again within a week to 10 days. If we can stretch her out to 10 days, we can breed her again. If it's 10 days or longer, there's a really good chance. It's almost the same as if she hasn't foaled. If she goes ahead and ovulates and cycles 5 days afterwards, what we'll do is we'll short cycle her, which is we'll manipulate her cycle and bring her back into heat. She'll generally be bred again within a few weeks.
Okay. So like my mom instinct is like, I really hope that's artificial and
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So on that, we're actually going to take a quick break for our sponsor message today. We are sponsored by Christian Lowe Leather Care. It's handcrafted in small batches by saddler Christian Lowe. The products leave your tack and leather goods nourished and looking their best. Available in select tack shops and online at christianlowe.ca.
All right. Thank you, Nikki. So I just have to go back to that for one second. So, okay. So we can breed the mare back to back. What? Okay. So ethically, financially, all the different things, like how often and how many times is it a good idea to breed a mare?
As the mare ages, you're much better off going back to back, which it seems counterintuitive. You want to give her a year off. She's getting old, but truthfully, carrying the foal is almost like a workout for her reproductive system. So you want it active. In the wild, they'll breed back to back until they can't. And it's honestly, you're going to have a lot more problems if you give her a year or two off in between foals. Now, obviously, I mean, not everyone can afford to do this. Not everyone wants another foal, and that's fine. It's just something to consider. I know because, you know, people are worried about appearing to be a backyard breeder or, you know, you don't want to appear to be overbreeding or breeding the mare. But biologically speaking, she's much better off to carry one back to back, like year after year. That doesn't mean you have to breed back on that full heat cycle, like a week after, but year after year after year is definitely the best way to go if you want to breed, you know, more than a couple times or long term.
How many, if you have a mare and you've started them as a brood mare, you know, let's say before the age of 14. And how many, if let's say we go 12. So my mare starts getting bred at 12 and she's now a designated brood mare. How many foals would she be set to typically have?
It depends on her. It depends on how she handles pregnancy. It depends on the condition of her uterus. It depends on how well she cycles or ovulates. There's a lot of factors there, but I mean, she'll generally, those old mares, they'll tell you, they'll stop catching, they'll stop settling or getting pregnant. I've seen mares have 12, 13 foals and look perfect, you know, look great for having it. So you just want to pay attention to your individual mare, how she's handling it, how, like, does she lose a lot of condition, lose a lot of weight afterwards, or during her pregnancy, does she sort of flirt with a little bit of founder or laminitis? Like, is the hormones really affecting her? You know, you have to really pay attention to the mare and just sort of feel it out that way. There's really no hard answer where mares can only have 10 babies a year. Some mares can only have two or three and that's it for them. And I mean, lots of mares can't ever get pregnant. Those are usually the championship mares that you really want to foal out of. Those are the ones you can't get pregnant. Yeah.
That's normally the way, but there's no set age on, like,
no,
the mare will tell you there's no set age for you to say, okay, it's not right to breed this horse anymore. She's going to let you know how she's feeling.
Definitely. Yeah. It's not the age, it's the condition of the mare. If she's dealing with injuries, if she's dealing with, like I said, like metabolic problems, I mean, then you know, it doesn't matter if that mare's seven. I mean, that's when you really need to step back and reevaluate why you're breeding her.
Okay, great. What sort of costs should be expected from pre-breeding to after, this is a big question, to after the foal is on the ground, just looking for like general costs of breeding to foaling?
Of course. I mean, I'm not going to include the stud fee because those can range from $1,000 to, I mean, last one we had, last year we had one that was here, the stud fee was $72,000. So, I mean, barring the stud fee, outside of that stud fee, you're going to look at usually around 3,000 up to 6,000. Just if nothing goes wrong, like, I mean, if just there's general things like, oh, she didn't catch the first time, or, you know, if there's just little things, if you're having a big wreck with foaling, or if the mare needs to be hospitalized at a clinic, or say she develops laminitis during the course of her pregnancy, I mean, you're gonna be spending a lot more, obviously. I mean, that would be even if she wasn't in foal. If you're gonna go the embryo transfer route, where we get her pregnant, there's an embryo, we flush it out of her and put it into another recipient mare, you're probably gonna look closer to say 6 to 10. Depending on how much you have to pay for the recipient mare, depending on how many chances it gets. Just there's so many more variables because now you're dealing with two mares instead of one.
Okay, so why would you do that embryo flushing?
Either the mare is unable to carry one, you can't get her to hold on to a pregnancy. It's a common thing. Or what you'll find a lot in the performance horse industry is you'll see four-year-old, three-year-old mares, and all of a sudden they somehow have five kids in 1 year, and they have been barrel racing or showing the whole time. So how that works is we can flush multiple embryos out of one mare in 1 year without her carrying it. They don't miss any time off. I mean, it takes a couple weeks, and there's no risk to that mare, to that donor mare. And yeah, obviously you can try as many breeding opportunities as you have money for.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. That clarifies some things for me. Nikki, were you just about to follow up there?
Yeah. I was going to say just that when I was in Texas and went to a breeding facility for the first time, that was one of the first things I noticed was the mares that were in the field with the babies. I was like, those don't look like cutting horses. What's happening? And, yeah. And that's where that was first kind of explained to me. So yeah, that's really interesting. And I guess, you know, if you have the money at your fingertips, you have the ability to be able to afford it, and you have this mare that's a championship mare, you know, just the risk alone, risk versus reward, you would probably want to invest in a donor mare.
Hmm. Yep. Yeah. I've had a few clients too, that they don't have necessarily a championship superstar mare, but they really don't want to risk their mare. I mean, because foaling is dangerous. I mean, it doesn't matter how much money you have. Sometimes you can't save either one of them, and they just really can't risk. So they'll only breed their mare once, but they'll save up all their money for that one time and do a recipient, which is perfectly fine. And then that way they can have their foal without risking their mare.
That's a really great thing to know that that's an option, right? So if a person decided that the costs were too high to have facility care for their horse through the breeding or foaling process, or maybe there are just none close by enough, and they wanted to have the mare and foal at home, what do you recommend in terms of safety and preparedness?
Definitely sort of plan for the worst. You want to make sure that your all your enclosures you're going to put them in, especially for the foaling and the first couple weeks of life. You want to make sure that the fencing or walls are all solid on the bottom. You want to make sure that the mare has a really nice quiet place away from like the other mares trying to pick on her or get in her space. You want to sort of assemble a foaling kit ahead of time. Join maybe some Facebook groups or something like that, and sort of get some experiences through them, through other people, you know, talking about their experiences, just so you can familiarize yourself with the process. The other thing is you want to find an emergency vet willing to come to you, or you want to be able to pack her up and get her to a clinic in a hurry if things go wrong. And definitely either, you know, if you have a husband or someone on your farm or someone around, even if you are a strong person, make sure you have someone who is willing to come to you at 2 a.m. that can help you, that is a pretty good size, because sometimes you do need a really strong set of arms to help with the foaling, and you don't want to be, you know, on your own for that.
Okay. So how often do people ultrasound their mare once they're pregnant?
We'll do it at 35 days just to make sure there's a heartbeat there. And then if it's a mare that we're not sure, like if she doesn't have a lot of uterine tone or she's lost foals in the past, we'll do it again 3 to 4 weeks later. Otherwise, after that 35-day check, we'll generally check them once in the fall just to make sure, because we're making plans for foaling, whatever. And we'll usually do it, say, like October, November. We'll just do another ultrasound just to ensure everything's going right. And then from then, you generally don't need to ultrasound them again. They're ready to go.
I have a follow-up question to just, you know, the safety and the preparedness. I was told recently that it's kind of a myth that we need to have this giant stall for breeding. I don't even remember why we were having the conversation in the first place. Nadine, do you know?
That was Dwayne from System Equine that told us that. Dwayne. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, on our last podcast episode.
All right. Yeah. So what's your experience with stall size for foaling out?
You don't need a huge foaling stall or pen if you're going to do it outside. What you need is something quiet and something solid and something safe. Our foaling stalls here are 14 by 16 feet. I would say bare minimum, if you have maybe a little quarter horse, maybe bare minimum, you want 12 by 12. Just you want enough room to get everything out of the way. You want enough room for her to move around without being on top of the foal. And you definitely want them in a small area where you can get to them and help them and that kind of thing. I know for years and years, and there's lots of people that do it, they have their foals in the field and let them go naturally. I'm still watching my last mare of the year. She'll be 1,056 that I've had here at Barnum. And I've seen some things. And my opinion of that, it's fine. People can do what they like with their horses. I know that's, they've done it for years. They've had them on their own. But my opinion of that is we put them in foal. So we have the responsibility of getting them through that process safely.
Wow. 1,056. You're not kidding when you say you've seen some things.
Yeah.
What are some reasons that you or experts you've worked with would not recommend breeding?
There's anything that's positive for any of the genetic panel diseases. So your HYPP, your PSSM, anything like that, fragile foal syndrome and warm bloods, you want to make sure both are tested. Get that right out of the way. If your mare is like a paint or quarter horse, you want to check for lethal light. So you don't want to go through this whole process just to have a heartbreak at the end, if you can help it. Then there's factors where, I mean, you have to look at your mare and say, if she reproduced herself exactly like a clone, would I be happy? Because there's a chance that you might get exactly the same thing. Same thing with the stallion. If your mare foals and it looks just like the stallion, will you be happy with that? Now, I mean, the chances of that, it's a better chance you're going to get sort of a mixture of the two, but you have to, you know, start right there with, I mean, if your mare is like has horrible conformation and a poor attitude and really didn't perform very well, you have to sort of reevaluate. Yes, her bloodlines might be okay, but if you get that again, will it be satisfactory? There's some conditions like, say if your mare or the stallion has say like Cushing's, like PPID or equine metabolic syndrome, those kinds of things. There's factors at play. They haven't proven that it's congenital or inherited, but there's a lot of factors at play that may lead to that. So if you have a mare or a stallion that has that, you may want to consider breeding to a mare or stallion that doesn't have it. You don't want to increase your chances of those things. So those kinds of things, you kind of put a star beside. In racing and performance, it's a really good idea to have a mare that was good at her job, has earnings, say. The baby is good. The foal is going to get a lot of their behavior and sort of their attitude towards work from the mare. I mean, they may get more energy and a little bit more temperament kind of thing from the stallion, but ultimately, I mean, what we talk about with mares is winners raise winners. So that's another thing you may want to sort of consider if you're really sort of gearing towards a performance home.
So just to clarify, you just said that the baby will get the temperament from the mare, correct?
Yes.
So, okay. Well, that translates to humans too, I believe, but, but really it's funny because when, you know, you come across somebody who maybe isn't as experienced breeding and they have this horse that, you know, they love and, you know, they don't necessarily love the attitude of the horse, but they do love the horse. And then that's really something that should be considered, is that I love the question. If you get a duplicate of this horse, are you going to be happy with that? That's a really great question for someone to ask.
Yeah, we have had some thoroughbred mares in the past with less than stellar attitudes that have somehow raised really sweetheart foals. But with that said, our foal program and our weanling program is really intensive. So, I mean, you can influence it. You can help it along. But at the end of the day, you only are dealing with what, you know, genetic material you have. So if you're, you know, if you're wanting a jumper, I mean, maybe don't breed the cutting mare to the draft horse.
Yeah. That makes perfect sense. Those are some really great tips. So what we're wondering now is, how does someone go about finding a facility if they want to breed their mare and they have never really realized that this was a service that can be provided? How does somebody find something like Barn on Ranches in their own area? Is there some kind of an association or a registry, or do we just Google search?
There's no associations or registries. What you probably want to do is maybe talk to a repro vet. They're going to know who foals out. They're going to know who's collecting stallions. They're going to know all those kinds of things. As well as if there's larger breeders in the area, they'll be able to steer you sort of to and away from the right people.
And so will some barns that do their own breeding, will they like often take in other mares as well? Is that kind of how it works sometimes?
It really depends on the farm. Some farms will take outside mares if they're going to breed back to their stallion. Some farms like us, I mean, we take all mares because we do have the space and the facility and the staff. So it really depends on the facility. There's other places that take no outside mares whatsoever. So it's, you really have to call around and just get that information when you're trying to find a facility.
I really do feel like it's something that we're not exposed to a lot here on the East Coast. But that if somebody decided that it was something they wanted to offer more of, I feel like people would really start to see it as a service that they would use. Personally, I feel with my lack of knowledge around breeding, that it would be something that I feel would be very valuable. So yeah, that's good to know. What do you think, Nadine?
Yeah, absolutely. I think more people around here that I know would just fold them out at home and go through that process. But then knowing that it's a potential for you to have somebody else that's an expert or that has so much experience makes so much more sense. It would totally be worth the money for a foal that you're either going to keep and have as a performance horse yourself, or if you want to sell it, it's definitely worth the investment, in my opinion.
Yeah. As far as the financial aspect of it, like the cost of actually foaling the mare out here is minimal compared to, you know, all you've put into breeding and stud fees and all the other, you know, aspect of the process.
Right. Yeah. Do you find it's becoming more popular?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Our weather has been like a little bit less, you know, dependable, and people are kind of going for the gold when they're selecting stallions. So if they're putting all their money into, say, like an embryo transfer, or, you know, if they're breeding to $15,000 stud fees, they want to make sure they see a return on their investment. They also don't want to be stuck with a foaling, you know, emergency or wreck, and be having to haul them into the clinic, or, you know, going through all those kinds of things just because they weren't prepared for it, or they weren't, they weren't experienced enough. They didn't have the skill and able to help their mare through it. What a lot of people don't know is you only have a half hour to get that foal out. After a half hour, it becomes an emergency. And then, you know, after about an hour, it becomes sort of an exercise in trying to save the mare's life. So, if you're not ready for it, if you're catching your mare at the end of it and she's having problems and it's not something you can resolve, I mean, it can easily turn into a tragedy.
I didn't know that timeline. Did you know that timeline? Okay. I did have somebody recently say there's like the magic threes in foaling. When the baby's on the ground, how long before they need on their feet, having their first drink, and then the placenta being passed?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a 1, 2, 3. I have mares that have foals that they stand up like 10 minutes later, like they're just up and they're whinnying like the stupid horse movies. And then I have other ones that, well, I mean, we have to sort of get them going. We have to sort of give them a little bit extra help. Generally, you want that foal standing within an hour and you want him drinking within about 2 hours. I would say on average, it takes about an hour and a half for a foal to learn how to nurse. And then the placenta, most mares, as soon as the foal starts nursing, the release of oxytocin as a result will cause the uterus to contract a little bit, and that'll help expel the placenta. Yeah, you generally want them to drop their placenta within 3 hours, but sometimes it does take a little longer, and it's not a harmful thing. What happens if they do hold on to it, like say overnight, we'll keep giving them shots of oxytocin. And then in the morning, the vet will come and say like flush them out and just make sure there's nothing left in there. If any tissue is left in there, there's a really high risk of laminitis, of the mare getting really sick. And I mean, that's just another factor that you really don't want to expose your mare to.
I'll tell you what, this is jumping ahead a little bit to where you tell me yours, but so I have had one foal in my whole life, and it was when I was like 13 years old. And so this is quite a long time ago. And I'm also like, I'm just going, oh my gosh, it's a nightmare what could have happened, because we literally had a pony who had a foal and we didn't even know when it was coming. Like we were like, oh, I think she's going to have it tonight. Let's sleep in the barn. And then like a week later, I came to feed her and she had a foal, and that was it. And I'm just now I'm looking back going, oh my gosh.
I mean, they do it in the wild, not very successfully, but I mean, they have them in the wild, and lots of people do just turn their mares out and let them foal out in the fields. But I mean, in general, not all mares need help per se, but I mean, all foals can benefit from like that early attention. The sooner you get in there to disinfect their navel, the lower the chance of any sort of infection sort of taking hold in the next week or two. And I mean, the closer to the right time you can get their blood work checked. We check all their blood to make sure they have the right amount of immunobodies, make sure they have antibodies, make sure they're not going to be susceptible to infections right off the bat. So we do that within 12 hours. All those kinds of things will set your foal up for success. And I mean, foals will go downhill once they get infections, or once they sort of are struggling with stuff like that. It doesn't take them very long to go downhill. And if you're not on top of that, again, now you're going to end up with like a hospitalization in a clinic, and dealing with sort of these illnesses. And then you can get illnesses on top of the illnesses and secondary infections. It's really, really tough for a foal. And if it goes too far, it's not like the old mare that, you know, she has a cut and it gets a little infected and it's kind of going on a long time. Foals don't have a long time. Their bodies will send those infections into their joints. It's sort of a survival mechanism. It's to keep the infections away from their major organs. Now, the problem for us is we need those joints to be healthy. And now the infection is taking toll. So what happens is it'll completely ruin their joints. When you x-ray them, the growth plates and the joint plates, it'll just be all ragged. And it's just from a simple infection that maybe could have been, you know, prevented, but from a shot of antibiotics.
Wow. I'm telling you right now, I can tell based on the fact that I know Nadine, that she will never have a foal at home without this service available. Am I right, Nadine?
Yeah, I'm listening to this going, yep, nope, I'll buy my next horse. Like, I'll buy it as a yearling or something. I'm not going through that.
Okay, so are there any other pieces of advice that you'd like to offer, or any frequently asked questions that we just haven't touched on?
For the most part, a lot of people ask about like weaning age, how long to leave the mare with the foal with the mare. we've always done it here, or since I've been here, I've always done it at least 5 months, unless the mare is sick or is having a hard time with it. I like to allow the baby to grow up a little bit. The foals seem to be a lot more confident, sometimes a little more overconfident, but it's so much easier to work with them and train them. And they're just so, they're a lot, it's funny because a lot of people will wean at 4 months and then bring them here to get trained. And there's such a huge difference in behavior. It's almost like taking a puppy away too early. It's just, it's incredible, the difference in that. So the other one I hear all the time is my yearling can't get mares pregnant. My stud colt can't get mares pregnant because he's only a year old. That's false. We had a couple oops babies from this year here. Not ours, but I mean mares that have come to foal because they were left in with the stud colts. So they're two or three year old mares coming to foal out. And stallions are stallions. They're born with those with the ability to make semen. And in a lot of cases in that yearling year, they're starting to produce some. Not all of them, of course, but it's usually the ones that are left in with the mares, of course. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, that is
really good to know. That is an oops.
Yeah. And so we've asked a lot of questions about mares and foals, but in terms of stallions, is there a downside to letting a stallion breed a mare at such a young age? Is there a good age for them to start breeding?
Actually I get young stallions where they're planning on breeding them in the future. So in their yearling to 2 year old year, they'll come and I'll teach them how to get collected. And there's no real downside for the stallion per se. I mean, the earlier they learn it, the better. And then this way, you know, especially if they have a performance future, they're not learning how to get collected and learning their job at the same time. So a lot of people before they do stand them at stud, they will maybe collect them, maybe try them with a couple of their mares really early on, just to see how they breed, just to see, and then it'll help them make plans in the future. But that said, I get the older stallions that have bred mares, for years, you know, live cover or pasture breeding on their own that have come to maybe start learning how to get collected. So, I mean, there's no too old. I mean, those guys are a little bit more challenging to convince to jump on a dummy versus a mare, but it can be done.
Okay. Yeah, that's really interesting. So we are just about finished, but first we need to do, you tell me yours, I'll tell you mine. And today we're asking, what would you say is the best and worst part about having a foal? Nikki, can we start off with our listener contribution today?
Yeah.
Okay. So Swain Family Sticks, it's at Swain Family Sticks on Instagram. She said it's both. It's their attention span is the best and worst thing about having a foal. So I think that makes sense. They're really curious. They want to follow you around. They want to be interested in everything that's going on, but only for a minute. And I think that we can relate to that because we both have young kids.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you want to share yours? Yeah.
We've also only had one foal, and I think I was like 7 when we had her. So we bought the mare. She was pregnant. The reason we bought her was because we got there and she was like in really poor condition and was sleeping on a concrete floor and she was pregnant. And so my grandfather, there was zero chance that horse was staying. And so she came to us pregnant with heaves and it was a sin. So many, when I'm thinking now, like so many risk factors, so many things that could have gone wrong, just lucky, you know, he did have a fair amount of horse experience, but also lucky that nothing too complicated happened. And she had a young one. So I would say the best was like seeing the baby for the first time and getting to name the baby just because I was so young. And that was like, that's what I recall as being the best. And then the worst was letting the little filly go, knowing that, you know, we really weren't set up as a family to have her And we were there, we got the mom because we love the mom, and the baby we knew from the start was not going to be staying with us. And so at a young age, learning that, yes, you fall so in love with these beautiful, beautiful little babies, and then you have to say goodbye. And so that was hard, but that would be my best and worst experience. Sean, why don't you share yours with us? And then Nadine, you can follow us up.
Well, the best part about foaling out all these mares for me is just like meeting the new babies, like seeing who they are, sort of we halter break them, just interacting with them. It's just, it never gets old. I remember every single, I follow them, like I follow their little careers. Sometimes they come back, like if they're fillies, they come back and I'm breeding them. So that's my favorite part. The worst part is the ones born with maybe problems that you couldn't foresee. Mares that just, we'll have dystocia, like birth problems where we can't get them out. And all of that hope, all of that expectation, all of that everything for the owners, I mean, and for me, because I'm invested now at this point. And there's just nothing you can do. That's definitely the worst.
Yeah, I can see that now. Like after going through over 1,000 of them, just the range of experiences must be so, like, so vast.
All right, Nadine.
Yeah. So, okay. So I said, I've only had my one foal, but I have worked at a place where we've had, you know, 5 or 6 in one summer. And just the best memories were of the year. We had all these, I think it was 5 foals. One of them may not have survived. So I think there were 6 and then it was 5. Anyway, I have so many memories of sitting there with 5 babies, just all laying down in the middle of the afternoon in the summer, having a nap, and they wouldn't go too far. So I was at this trail ride stable and it was a public area and all the babies were loose because their moms were all tied up, but they wouldn't go too far. So it was just the cutest thing to just see babies wandering around everywhere and that you could just go scratch them. They'd be laying down. They'd let you scratch their bellies. It was the coolest thing. And then the worst thing I think from my memory from back then is just having to teach them all things from scratch. I just remember like teaching them to pick up their feet and work with the farrier. It was like they were little octopuses with 1,000,000 feet just dangling everywhere. Well, that was my experience.
Oh, that's good. So it's funny because like part of me after this conversation is like, oh, it would be such a great experience. And the other part of me is like, no, I'm not prepared for any of that. And if I was to decide to, then I would probably be contacting Sean.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And you know, I knew this was coming, but you've said it a couple of times and I'm struggling with a mare who has just been diagnosed with laminitis and probably like a metabolic syndrome. So any chances of her having a foal are probably gone at this point. So it's a little disappointing, but it's also kind of like, yeah, was I really ever going to do it? Like probably if I want to have a reigning performance bred horse, I'm probably going to go out and just buy them. But it's a little bit disappointing when those thoughts are taken away, you know, when the choice is gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, with your mare, I mean, you could always try embryo transfer with her. But the one thing I would say, and I think a lot of people do make this mistake, is while she's off or recovering from something, don't put her in foal. Don't subject her to those stresses on top of that. It's just, it's not good. It's not an actual year off for mares when you put them in foal. So
that's, I'm really glad you said that.
Yeah. 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 That's a really good point. And to be able to just say, it's not a year off. You know, even if your horse has an injury, if your horse, something is stopping you from riding them and, you know, oh, well, they have a year off anyway. It's, you know, their body's doing so much work that I think that's really important for people to reflect on.
Absolutely. So right now we're going to do our ebook giveaway. Once a month, we choose a listener who has been interacting and supporting us on social media to receive a free ebook that is generously donated by publisher Trafalgar Square Books. We heard from Santina Beaton McCachran for the first time a couple weeks ago, after she had just binge listened to a bunch of our episodes. She had some very kind things to say, and the funniest was that she had been talking to some friends and they agreed that they never thought they'd be so fascinated and hanging on to every word of a podcast episode about horse insurance.
So true.
That's episode 6, if you're wondering. So thank you very much for your feedback, Santina. Someone from Trafalgar Square Books will be in touch with you soon so you can pick out your ebook. If you are a horse lover who likes to read, we highly recommend going to horseandriderbooks.com so you can check out their full list of horse books for sale. They have paper and ebooks available.
All right. So Sean, if someone is interested in any of the services provided by Bar None Ranch and wants to get in touch with you, what's the best way to find you?
I run our Facebook page, the Bar None Ranch's Facebook page. So you can always get in touch with me through there, as well as our website is www.barnineranches.com, and my email's on there. Not only just about the services, but I mean, a lot of people do contact me just for little bits of advice here and there. And I never mind. I know I'm always open to help people.
Well, we are very grateful to have had you on the show. We appreciate it. You and the listeners can clearly hear our lack of experience in the breeding world. But it's definitely interesting to us. And we know that, you know, with the amount of experience that we have in the horse world and still having not come across some of this information, that it will land for some of our listeners and answer some very important questions that they might be having if they're thinking about breeding or if they are planning on breeding in the future, a particular mare or a future mare, whichever. But I'm really grateful for you to be able to share your experience and your expertise with us.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much. Have a great day, everyone. Thanks for listening today.
If you know a fellow Canadian equestrian or equine business you think needs to be highlighted on the show, be sure to email podcast@informedequestrian.com so we can be in touch.
And if you enjoyed today's episode, the best way to send us some love is by sharing about Canada Horse Podcast and Informed Equestrian with your friends.
And leaving a review is always appreciated. Your support means the world to us.
Until next time.
Right on, Canada.